Let's head to the UK and welcome our correspondent Matt Dathan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Boris Johnson has had the first press conference actually in some weeks, and this is very much over the concerns about a rising COVID numbers, Matt.
Yeah, that's right. Today was another stark reality check with the number of cases over 7,000. Yesterday, that was the highest ever recorded in Britain. Obviously, there are more tests being rolled out now compared to the when we were in lockdown back in March when the pandemic hit Britain. But it is sadly true that the crisis is really hitting the second wave, because the number of hospitalizations are up, and the number of people on ventilator beds has more than doubled in 10 days. So Boris Johnson, flanked by his two scientific and medical advisors, today made his first press conference for 3 weeks, warning that Britain is at a critical stage in its battle against the second wave of coronavirus. And a typical turn of phrase from Boris Johnson, he urged Britain not to throw in the sponge, which was obviously designed to grab headlines tomorrow.
Why haven't we seen more of him in public, given the circumstances? Why have there been so few press conferences?
Well, that's a very, very good question, and a question that we've been asking. The Tories might argue that it's best he doesn't make too many appearances, because yesterday we had a quite extraordinary gaffe from the Prime Minister. In the UK, there's about 48 different areas in local lockdowns, and the northeast of England is almost in complete lockdown, where two households can't meet anywhere, inside or outdoors. But Boris Johnson was asked to clarify what the rules were in the northeast because of all the confusion, and he himself didn't know that you couldn't meet different households inside or out, and he thought there was no maximum on the number of people you could meet outdoors. It's just quite extraordinary. So that's one reason why he might not be showing his face. But basically, Boris Johnson, he obviously is hating this crisis, as all world leaders are, but he's desperate to give Britain good news, positive news. So last week we saw him send out his two scientific and medical advisors to explain how serious the problem was. He had to obviously come out and announce the further restrictions on the day afterwards. But since then, he's tried to basically send out positive news announcements. And yesterday he was trying to talk about how we're going to recover from the unemployment crisis hitting our country by reskilling all those unemployed people into industries that are in the future, the green kind of jobs. But in doing so, he then messed up and made a big gaffe and triggered all those negative headlines.
So on the COVID cases themselves, there have been what, more serious lockdowns again? Are they more kind of regionalised or localised?
Yeah, so far, Boris Johnson has been keen to really kind of target certain areas where there are flare-ups. We have had national measures imposed across the whole country, such as a 10 p.m. curfew on pubs and restaurants, and tables-only service in restaurants and bars. So you can't just stand at a bar, or you can't just stand in the pub or wherever you like. But those are quite limited, really. And there is a ban on anyone meeting more than six people inside or outside. But beyond that, it's actually just local lockdowns which go further. And today, actually, it's really interesting. The government published a whole array of stats showing where the virus is most serious and where the regions of the UK is doing better. And the northwest, it's basically a big north-south divide. The northwest is showing around about 1,500 cases a day at the moment, out of those 7,000 cases a day in the UK. And the southwest are down to as little as 200. So, and it really gives you a stark contrast to how we are. But there's a big regional row going on in the UK, and this is going to be big over the next couple of weeks. London is still not in a local lockdown, despite some areas of London showing higher cases than areas that are in local lockdowns in the rest of the country. Boris Johnson doesn't want to lock down London, because that means 9 million people will not be able to go out of their house and go to pubs and socialise, and that would cripple, he thinks, the economy. But it's very controversial, because people in the north will be saying, hang on a minute, why are Londoners getting special treatment?
There's a massive row going on in the football world in the UK. What's that about?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid there's rows all over the place in the UK. Plus ça change, I guess. But this is so the fans are meant to be back in stadiums. I mean, I know that you guys over there have got fans back in rugby stadiums, haven't you? But we look on with the envy. They're meant to be coming back 25% stadiums from tomorrow, actually, the 1st of October. We're a day, 12 hours behind. But the government scrapped that a couple of weeks ago because of the second wave of coronavirus cases, which basically, you know, the lower leagues in England, they rely massively on the gate receipts, in contrast to the Premier League, which basically a massive chunk of the revenue comes from TV. So without anyone going to games, they are running a loss because every time they open their stadium to play games, they're operating at a loss. And many clubs, about a dozen clubs now out of the 92 Football League teams, are facing going to the wall because of COVID within weeks. And so, you know, Premier League, the richest league in the world, clubs that pay footballers £600,000 a week, Gareth Bale, they are being, you know, understandably urged to step in and bail out the lower leagues. But there's a big row because Premier League they are cash deprived as well. They are losing revenue from a lack of ticket sales and the like. So they are basically saying, well, we will give money to the lower leagues, but only if the government allows us to get football fans back in the stadiums. And there's a big standoff because the government obviously is not ready to send fans back.
The Home Secretary is looking at setting up asylum processing centres where? In offshore islands?
Yes, the UK has seen a massive sort of surge in illegal migrants trying to cross the channel between France and the UK in small boats, such as dinghies. Just to give you an idea of how this problem has sort of risen in the last year, the first 8 months up to August, there were 5,000 illegal migrants trying to enter into the UK in small boats. That compared to just about 1,500 in the whole of 2019. So this route, the Home Secretary is really trying to close down and is really trying to target and tackle people smuggling. And she's basically told her officials to explore any way they can to try and tackle this. And one of the ideas leaked out last night is that they're trying to find an offshore island to process asylum seekers, which is hugely controversial. But actually, one of the islands the officials suggested could be an option is the Ascension Island, an overseas British territory 4,000 miles away in the South Atlantic Sea. So the Home Secretary had to come out today and insist this, you know, this wasn't actually a plausible plan. But we've therefore discovered what is the plausible options, and they're considering processing and shipping all these asylum seekers up to the Scottish Hebrides. And also the Isle of Wight and the Isle of Man. So it's a real sort of raging debate in the UK. I don't know, basically Priti Patel wants to try and copy the approach taken by Australia by the former Prime Minister, my mind just now, I can't remember his name.
Tony Abbott, sorry, where are we at?
Tony Abbott, yes, that's the one, yeah.
Thank you. He's coming to see you soon, by the way. He's the new trade envoy, I think.
He's caused another row. Yes.
All right, let's just look at this final matter, of course, which is very, very sensitive here in New Zealand, which is the first fatal shooting of a police officer in the UK soil in almost 10 years. And this officer had been living in the UK for a long time, but this has really had an impact on the force there.
It has. It's had an impact across the whole of the UK, and I know in New Zealand as well, where he was born. You know, this 54-year-old Metropolitan Police officer was very close to retirement and had chosen to be a custody officer because it was safer, and he wanted to spend his last months and years in the force in a much safer environment. And ironically, a man who was arrested on Saturday night, because of COVID secure rules, the officers didn't actually do a thorough enough body check on him. And it turned out he'd managed to hide a gun down the back of his trousers, even though he was handcuffed. And when he was taken into one of the cells in the Croydon police police station, he managed to set off. He managed to pull the trigger, hitting Matteo Ritano, who very tragically died. And the suspect also was hit himself as he was, and is in critical condition in hospital, and hasn't been able to talk to police officers. It's incredibly sad. And the first shooting of a police officer, fatal shooting since 2011.
Thanks very much. Matthew Dathan is our correspondent in the UK.